Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hello.
Sid, how are you?
I'm good. And you?
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Meet the author.
Thank you.
Let me just give a little brief background, Sid, before we get into the meat of the program. My guest today is Sid Goodman. Sid retired after 40-plus years working in the aerospace and high-tech plastics fields. He also taught graduate courses on plastics at the University of Southern California for over 25 years. He has written numerous technical articles, 2 encyclopedia articles, and 3 major reference books on plastics. Book 1, Plastic Materials and Process, Book 2, Handbook of Thermoset Plastics, and Book 3, Handbook of Thermoset Plastics, Second Edition. Oh, Sid, again, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you're the first guest I've had who has been in the technical writing field as opposed to a novelist. So I'm not sure if I'll ask you all the right questions, but I'd like to begin with what prompted you to even decide to write a technical manual?
That's a good question. Actually, what happened was I had begun part-time instructor at USC teaching a class on plastics, and I wasn't very happy with the kind of textbook material that was out there. And so I went searching around for someone who would be willing to publish a syllabus for me that I could use as a classroom text. Well, 7 years later and 900 pages later, we ended up with this huge reference volume that I did with a co-author, ultimately, and it became, so to speak, the standard for 10 or 15 years. To give you your listeners a basis of comparison, it was a bestseller because I sold 2,000 copies. Now, you compare that to a standard creative writing type of publishing, and we're talking a real big difference.
Oh, sure.
And then the second books really came out of the fact that once I was hooked up with a publisher, they saw elements of the first book that could be lifted out, as it were, to be made more specific. And so we basically did that. Now, for the purposes of your audience, what I'd be glad to talk about, if you're interested, was the differences between working as a co-author versus I edited the last two and dealing with other high-tech writers.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the big switch and the reason that you and I have gotten together was the fact that after I retired, I decided that I'd really like to take a crack at creative writing. And this is basically where I'm at right now. And so if you want, we can talk a little bit about the commonalities and discontinuities between the two types of writing.
I'd love to hear that. Go ahead and shoot.
All right. Well, for one thing, when you're writing nonfiction, you've got one way or another to establish some street cred. And since I had been in the business for some time and I was associated with a fairly reputable university outside of football, it wasn't all that difficult to find a publisher who was willing to back me up. Now, this was in the days of traditional publishing, where basically they wrote you an advance check, and you cranked out the book, and then they published it. And the first thing they did was get their advance back out of the proceeds of the monies they made. I was kind of chicken in those days, so when I got my advance check, I promptly put it in the bank because I never thought it would really get published, and I figured this way I could pay them back and not lose any money. But in any case, the approach was, of course, that the publisher provided just about everything because they felt like they had not only identified the marketplace, but they knew how to sell in it. And So my job was to establish the veracity and credibility of the content of the book and provide them actually with a fairly limited amount of what we call promotional material, you know, biography and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you turn around today, and if you're trying to get into the publishing just about anything, whether it's nonfiction or fiction, first of all, just to crack any kind of decent publishing house is in and of itself a major job, and I'm sure some of your previous authors have alluded to that. So suddenly now you've got options of publishing yourself, POD type publishing, all sorts of other approaches to try to get that book out on the street. The other thing is, if you're publishing creative works, nonfiction, you're going for a little bit more elusive marketplace. Nonfiction has got a nice piece of it, is the fact that it's fairly simple to designate who you're going to sell it to. Now,
mm-hmm.
On the other side of the coin, by doing that, you, of course, are limiting your product sales. If you're an MD going to sell something, that, unless it happens to be one of these populist medical journals that are going to go out on Oprah or something, you're not going to sell New York Times bestseller list quantities. You're still going to go to a very specific marketplace, the medical profession of some kind. Those, I think, were the biggest differences that I have found so far. Creative writing becomes almost more of a marketing promotion job than it does to just creatively put your thoughts down on a piece of paper.
Well, you mentioned that was going to be a question I was going to ask you, is you know, you and I know a lot of the same authors from our Henderson Writers Group, for example,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure you've heard the same things I have at meetings or in side discussions, that the marketing piece of writing is one of the more difficult things to overcome. You know, the manuscript preparation actually is fairly easy in comparison to then getting a publisher, and then once you're published, getting the work into the hands of the readers. And
yeah.
That's got to be probably a big difference from your technical books.
Yeah, I absolutely do agree. That is probably, if not the biggest, it's darn close to the biggest. I think the other thing is that when people get involved in creative writing, there's an image that has been fostered over the years in the movies and TV and elsewhere, is that you know, you go off into the English countryside somewhere and you ensconce yourself in some little room and you burn a candle and you write for the sake of the art, and somehow or other that transmogrifies itself into the great world novel, as it were. And that's the nice part. That would, you know, would that that is all that it would take.
Right.
One of the big shockers, of course, let me back off. I wasn't shocked at the fact of how difficult creative writing is. I mean, when I used to write technically, I was on my turf, and so I wasn't afraid of the language or the use of the language or the formats, because I'd been living it. But when you get into creative writing, now you're getting into something that's a little bit more ethereal and esoteric. And I always, as a young man, admired creative writers who could manipulate the language to effect the kind of storytelling that they did.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me personally, the challenge was to see, do I have the smarts to even do it? And what I learned was, yeah, not that bad, not that good. I was an engineer. I didn't pay a lot of attention in English class when I should have. And so structure and correct usage and stylistic things, basically had to learn from scratch. And so the new writer has got to do that. He doesn't just have to ponder the story. He's
right.
Got to know how to get it told. Having said that, I will say that I have found that the best authors tend to be the best storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done is they've taken the story that they could sit around a bonfire and tell, and translated that into the written word. And that's not easy.
It takes a certain gift, doesn't it?
I think so. I think so. It has, so when I go to some of these critique sessions, now, mind you, I guess we should establish for your listeners that I haven't sold the novel yet. As a matter of fact, I am agonizing right now over a children's book that materialized after I had paid a visit to some grandchildren on the East Coast, and I was jotting some notes down on the airplane regarding an event that occurred between me and my two grandsons. And the next thing I know, people are telling me, well, there's a nice children's book in here. So, okay, I dashed off a manuscript that got very well received, but I'm hung up on an illustrator. The mechanics of getting an illustrator to mesh with the story is something I just never anticipated. And so something that in my mind should have taken, 6 months to get done is dragged on now for well over a year, and I still don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. So here I told the story, and yet the mechanics of getting it in print and out is taken forever.
I found, and what you're just saying I think confirms that, the writing business, the overall business of writing, is not for people that aren't capable of having some patience. It's a very, very, at times, slow-moving process. It seemed to me like you're always waiting for something. You send out your queries, and you're waiting for a response. You're doing your research, and you're waiting for a response. You're publishing, and you're trying to get some promotional events, and you're waiting for responses and bookings. Have you found that
I found that on both ends of the spectrum. I have an interesting anecdote, I guess, or a moral story, is that one of the things I learned from even the nonfiction was that if something can go wrong, guaranteed, it's gonna.
Murphy's Law.
And that, you know, if things go right, they just take a long time to go right. Consider this, and to some extent, you know, some of your writing fits in this category. In the high tech field where I was at, you had to start out with the assumption that by the time the book got published, it was obsolete. Unless you were, mm-hmm. You're doing a primer, a classroom, beginning math, that doesn't change. But if you're really writing about an advanced field that is changing almost daily, well, by the time your book gets on the street, there's big chunks of it that are literally obsolete. And so one of the issues you had to live with was, how do I stop? How do I stop writing and say, this is as far as I'm going to go?
Mm-hmm.
And that caused, towards the end particularly, there was a lot of friction between me and my co-author, because he'd get the latest journal or something. I said, oh, we got to include this. We got to include this. I said, no, we can't. We got to stop somewhere. And this is a problem. The good authors that I've seen take an attitude that if the change is continuing and the book is well received, you can always expand upon it in Volume 2.
Mm-hmm.
And if your reader liked Volume 1, you have a high probability they'll like what you're going to do for Volume 2. And that happened in my second books. My first book, again, by the time it hit the street, was, to a good extent, had a lot of sections that were really out of date. And the publisher came back and said, we got to fix these up. And so we spent another year and a half focusing on those things that had advanced the state of the art. And then to really cover our tracks, we published a new chapter that addressed what we think's going to happen. We did a little outlook into the future of what we thought the new exciting stuff was.
Right.
And again, the point there was to capture your reader and keep them coming back and asking for more. So that's something you can do. That is something you can do to combat obsolescence.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's something I've never done, this type of writing, and I would never have thought of that, actually, that by the time you
get
done.
Well, okay, let me throw an example right back at you. I mean, your last book, Culotta,
mm-hmm.
you have a the end on the thing, but within months after the book came out, you had all the big investigations and trials back in Chicago that he was involved in, and not just parenthetically. I mean, that to me was a natural evolution of what Culotta wrote about when you wrote about him in your in that book.
Very true. Very, very true. Yeah, that's we need something to update that, you know, because it is a critical part, really, of the overall story as to what happened to these guys. And,
let me tell you, as long as we're on the subject, I got a good anecdote. We talk about, you know, when do you stop and when do you really have to just get down in the nitty-gritty. When we were at the final page proofs, I mean, we're talking galley proofs here. We're ready to go to press. And my co-author calls me up and says, you know, you've got this table of historical events right at the beginning that says so-and-so invented this and such did that since 18-whatever to the present. And I said, yeah. And he says, well, you got an error. In 1930, so-and-so really didn't invent this plastic. Actually, we were talking about nylon, of all things. And I said, yeah, he did. He invented it in nylon. Everybody knows it, you know. He says, no, actually, he says, the real inventor was a Catholic priest who taught at Notre Dame University in South Bend. And I says, well, maybe he came up with some original chemistry, but he never really made the plastic practically. And I'm, you know, I don't know why we're even having this argument. And he got very serious, and he says, it's just morally wrong. We've got to give that man credit. And I said, well, that might be a debatable point, but why do I need to give him credit now when we're ready to go to press? And he said, well, how would you like to be his sons and not see him credited? And I paused for a moment, and I said, my friend, he was a Catholic priest. I'm not going to worry about him having sons at this late date. So,
very good.
And I always think back to the, you know, the absurdity of it all, but, you know, when you're doing something and you think you're finally putting it to bed, I guarantee you something's going to crop up.
Mm-hmm.
when I was editing, a bigger problem was when we went from first edition to second edition was the fact that I had a fairly broad spectrum of guys who were contributors to individual chapters and stuff. Well, when we went around the second time, I naturally went back to them and said, you know, let's update. Well, one guy said, no way in hell will I ever do something like this again. Another guy died on me. And a third guy, forget what his reason was, but he ended up saying, I got someone to replace me, and he brought me some immigrant professor from Nigeria who could barely speak English. And suddenly, there you are, like 3 or 4 months away from deadline, with these guys having to do a rewrite, and you're saying, where am I going to get a guy to replace the dead guy? You know, this sort of stuff. So it happens. And I guess if I wanted to be very fatherly about it, I'd remind all new authors, if something's going to go bad, guaranteed, it will.
It will. Be prepared, right?
So, but it is exciting. Dennis, I cannot deny that I just had my first short story published, and there is a certain real ego boost.
Mm-hmm.
That hits you when you get that first one out there, and it's sort of a confirmation that, you know, you can do it, that people do want to read what you've got to say. And that's why I'm always encouraging my fellow newbies and wannabes to don't give up. You got to keep doing at it. You got to keep working it.
Let's just pause for just a second. I said, have you got any contact information you'd care to give out should somebody have a question for you and want to perhaps email you or go to a website or something?
Sure. I don't have a website, but I mean, they're welcome to contact me on my email. It's LV, like Las Vegas, DBF, Dog Boy Frank, the number 1, at embarkmail.com. And I'll do my best to respond to any questions or comments that people might have.
Okay, so anyone listening now, or if you listen to this on the on an archived basis, if you have any questions about the technical writing or then switching to a creative writer, certainly email Sid, and like he said, he'll attempt to answer any questions you might have. So take him up on his kind offer. Now, what I found, Sid, and I don't know what your experience has been, but I found that a lot of authors, and I want to talk about the novelists, like I was several years ago, a newbie, don't learn the writing business. Some of them will learn even writing. They will take creative writing classes and join writers' groups, which are all good things. I mean, that's fine. But they leave out the second word of writing business. They don't get into the business of writing. They may address writing, but not what happens afterward. And I think it's one thing if you're going to be, saying, writing a family history or something with a very limited audience, and it's going to be your only book, and you basically know it's only going to be purchased by family or friends. That's one thing. But if you really want to get your work out there, and you think you're going to be producing a quality product that you're going to want people to read, and maybe we'll do additional manuscripts or books, I think it's important, and the earlier the better, to learn that there's more to writing than writing the manuscript. Would you share that opinion or no?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I'll be so bold as to suggest that the whole concept of marketing yourself is more prevalent than one might think. Consider this. Look at some of the good, and I emphasize good, screen actors, playwrights, ballet stars, if you will. Even, I'll go so far as to say, pop singers. The ones who have established themselves for the long term got the break, did the artistic part of whatever it is they did, but then they became integral to the business of selling themselves in the long term. And by many means, they did, large shows, they authored books, they started a clothing line. But the real artist at some point has to make a decision. Do you want to just confine yourself to an ivory tower and be admired by a certain level of academic intelligentsia, and that satisfies you, or do you want to make money?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's the latter, then you've got to disjoin yourself from your artistic talent and become a major participant in the creation of you, the business person.
Mm-hmm.
And if you then associate yourself with the right kinds of associates who can help you be that person, business person, then you probably are looking at a fairly substantial financial success. Yes, just like you say, you won't be limited to selling your book to your relatives, but in fact you'll consider what the international market's going to be like, how do we do with, theft, artistic theft, what kind of contractual stuff do I need, do I make sure I pay my taxes on time? stuff that...
Little trivial details.
yeah. Well, I mean, again, but, to some extent, the media itself established this image that all the artist has to do is be artistic, whatever he does, and that there will be these people surrounding them who will take care of these things. Well, if you're lucky, you might. But we have so many examples of people that surrounded themselves with people who were after one thing and one thing only, and that is to suck away the fruits of this person's artistic nature. And I'm sure I could mention, how many different names in the sports world, entertainment world, that basically were good people with good intentions and good skills and are now broke or in jail or whatever because the people who surrounded them stole from them.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to your comment, the new author has to make that decision. And once that decision's made, you've got to devote as much energy and learning to how to run your business of you than you as you would have when you learned your business of writing you. So I absolutely concur.
And I'll tell you what else I've noticed, and again, I'd like your opinion on this, and see
sure.
if you see it the same way I do, is that the person who finishes the manuscript and hasn't explored, researched the publishing aspect and the marketing aspect, and thinks they can sit back on their couch waiting for the publishers and agents to start pounding their door in, or
mm-hmm.
once the book is published for the TV stations and the reporters to be
right.
you know, looking for interviews and
absolutely.
Bookstore managers demanding that they appear for a signing, are going to be so disappointed. And if you're not prepared for that, if you're not prepared to know what comes after the manuscript, I know writers that have indicated to me, and I've seen this, I've heard it personally and also seen it on various websites and message boards, is people who say, hey, I'm throwing my my files away. You know, writing isn't what I thought it was going to be. I thought somebody did all this for me. I'm shy. I'm this. I'm that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a marketing person. And, I basically wasted my time writing this first book. And I know some people are more comfortable with marketing than others, but I was shy, too. I know you probably would never know it today, but 12, 14 years ago when I first started writing, I was in that category, but I forced myself because I thought I had a good product and I believed in myself. I made myself learn how to be comfortable in talking with people, which
mm-hmm.
is what a lot of this is about. And if you're not willing to make that commitment, and I wish I had done it earlier because it wouldn't have been as difficult for me to learn on the fly, but if you're not willing to commit to the whole package, you might be better off, you know, to think of something else to do if you're just looking for something to, you know, as a hobby or something. What do you think?
I absolutely agree with you. I also agree with your observation of how difficult going through the transition from the introspective shy person to the outgoing, Madison Street PR guy, it's very difficult because it basically goes against the grain of your personality that you've cultivated over good knows how many years. I have met people who reach a point where they say it's below me to become a peddler. Well, I occasionally run into those people in academia quite a bit. They seem to find a home there. But again, they're not making money. They're using it to establish credibility and credentials. We have in Las Vegas, we have the Black Mountain Institute, and they thrive on what I'll call the more esoteric type of authors that have international reputations, but they're broke. I mean, what can
yeah.
I say? You know, they're no worse off than a well-paid college professor or whatever, and that's fine. I'm not trying to despair that. That's okay if that's what you want. And then, interesting that the way you brought it up, consider a few recent public events that occurred. I don't remember the names, but maybe you will recall. A few years ago, there was some young Indian woman. By Indian, I mean East Indian, who resides with her family in the New York area, whose parents had social contact with one or two of the really big publishers back there.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow or other, they pulled strings to get a huge contract, writing contract with her. She made, like $1 million or so dollars to publish this novel. And the novel was a catastrophe. I mean, it was awful. And the publisher was trying to find a way to get out of this quietly, and it ended up being splattered all over the pages about how, totally mismatched the woman was with the publishing business, because she really didn't want to be an author. She didn't want to be part of the marketing and business part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I thought about it, I said, I bet you there are people sitting out there who think that's all it takes. If you know somebody and you grease the right hands, well, that'll get my book published. And I have to agree with you, Dennis. I think there's a lot more to it than just that. I think it has to be your own ability to be a business person.
Yep, you're actually you're a businessman or woman. That's
absolutely.
Log Talk Radio.
Good. I don't know where the time went to, but I just got a notice in my ear that we're out of time.
Wow.
We've stopped the live stream, but what we're saying now will be in the archive show, so you're not going to be cut off
okay.
Your knees here. But I have to get going. I want to thank you so much for being on with me today, and I certainly would like to have you back when your children's book comes out. Hopefully you'll get that illustrator situation resolved quickly.
Thank you. I sure look forward to it, and I can't thank you enough for asking me to participate with you, and we'll be seeing you around town, I'm sure.
Thanks again, Sid, and have a great one.
Yeah, same
bye
to
bye.
You, Dennis. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And again, I want to thank Sid for being on the show today and giving us a little perspective from the technical writing side versus the creative writing. And it's very interesting to me, and it's something I hadn't, because I'm not a technical person, I'd never thought of before. So, again, thanks to Sid. And have a great day, everybody, and we'll be talking to you on the next show. Bye-bye.